Hello and welcome to Presenting, a podcast where we chat about various topics related to role-playing games. I'm John Godek, and with me today is Wolfgang Bauer. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Hey, John. Good to be here.
Yeah, I'm so glad that we could get this fit in your busy schedule. You know, when I was talking to Jeff Grubb, I mentioned to him that, you know, I've been trying to get Wolfgang Bauer, and I kind of contacted through the form on his website. But I'm not getting any response back. Is there a better way? And he said, oh, let me ping him and see if he's got time.
I'm glad he did.
Yeah. So I'm glad it worked out.
Sure.
So Wolfgang is the Kobold in Chief of Kobold Press, which just recently celebrated its 15th anniversary. And he's been writing, editing, and designing professionally for 30 years. He worked on Dungeons & Dragons products for both TSR and Wizards of the Coast, beginning with a stint as assistant editor for Dragon Magazine and including material for the Planescape campaign setting, and more recently as a designer on Horde of the Dragon Queen with Steve Winter for Wizards of the Coast, 5th edition D&D, and he also contributed to the Tome of Beasts and many other titles from Kobold Press. So Wolfgang, you've had a long and storied career working on numerous RPG products, as well as crafting well over 100 magazine articles.
Something like.
Yeah. Can you talk about your path to becoming a writer and a game designer and a publisher?
Well, sure. Those are three good but different things. I can tell you the writer part is easy for me to talk about. It's so long ago, 30 years ago, I sent in a query using a typewriter and paper and a stamp to Dungeon Magazine in Lake Geneva. And I got a response back saying, yeah, your idea is fine. Send it in, kid. And I was 15 or 16 and I had to, you know, sign a waiver and send them a paper manuscript of the thing. and they published it. It was like the late 80s. And then a year later it was published. Anyway, it was kind of a very much of the time thing, but, they very quickly moved to, hey, send us a 3.5-inch floppy disk. Mm-hmm, and I felt very sophisticated to be sending them a digital version of my file. But that was, you know, that was publishing 30 years ago. Game design came later. Like, I mean, those were adventures. That was certainly writing. But like in terms of doing a standalone product, by then I'd been hired as an assistant editor on the periodicals for Dungeons & Dragons. And as a freelancer, they said, would you like to write an Al-Qadim adventure? And, you know, not surprisingly, I said, boy, would I. And so I wrote Assassin Mountain as my first box set standalone game design. And I also worked on Planescape around that time. And that was from like 91 to 95. Assassin Mountain was fun. I looked at it the other day just for cover art reasons, and I noticed the heroic assassin on the front cover, she's wearing high-heeled sandals, and I'm like, yeah, I remember being like, what was that?
Not so practical, especially on a mountain, right?
Right, and it's like, you're an assassin. How are you going to go around assassinating? Well, you're going to put on your high-heeled sandals, then you're going to put on your turban and carry off your sword, and you're like, but it was the first piece I had, you know, with my name on the cover. So I'm still very pleased and proud. As a publisher, I started 15 years ago, like you mentioned. Kobold Press was kind of a self-publishing thing, kicked off in 2006. And it was just meant to be me kicking around stuff I thought I'd never publish at Wizards of the Coast or Paizo or any of the big RPG places. I was like, this is a weird little steampunk city adventure. Nobody wants that for, you know, mainstream D&D or Pathfinder or any of those systems. I published them myself, and then it just kind of snowballed from there over the last 15 years.
You know, so when you were first started publishing, how did you kind of get the audience, right? You've been doing some freelance work, but it's kind of, I'm just thinking in 2006, you know, there's not a lot of social media. Maybe MySpace is out there. I don't know. And
MySpace is not far off. It was actually LiveJournal that I was using as the platform. And I think if you go hunt around, you can probably still find the first post, like March 20th, 2006 where I say, hey, if I put up a tip jar, you know, would people throw money at me actually finishing this and sharing a PDF or a print product with people? And like, it was 11 at night. And I just like, yeah, whatever. Maybe somebody will pay me enough money to like get some cover art, right? Or get a cartographer, something like that. Because I didn't really know. I knew about writing and I knew about editing and I knew about meeting deadlines for magazines, which were all great skills. But what I didn't know about was like, how do you build the audience? How do you get there? And I was super fortunate because TSR and Wizards of the Coast, working as a staffer at those places, gave me enough of an internet profile that people were like, oh, this guy's doing something, right? Well, I'll throw $5 in and hope it turns into something. And I shudder to think what that first budget was like, but it was black and white or digital only. And, you know, it was kind of word of mouth at first. I didn't know how to advertise it. I certainly didn't know how to get it into stores. That came later. But DriveThruRPG was a big part of the early story too.
Yeah. I didn't know how old that was. So it was available back then.
DriveThru has been around for at least 20 or more than 20 years. Wow. They made their bones with Monty Cook and Mal Havoc Games at the start of the open gaming license with third edition D&D. And the open game license meant you could publish a D&D supplement, right? And that was a great big boom 20 years ago, 22 years ago, and those sorts of products. But people like Monty or myself had a leg up because we'd already been working at Wizards and kind of had a sense of what it would take to make something look professional, play tested, well edited, good maps, nice cover, like all the components that you expect to come together in a good RPG product. Monty did it 5 years before I did. I was busy working at Microsoft at the time. I was doing it nights and weekends.
Wow. So you were, when you started COBOL, it was a side gig and you
It was very much a side gig. Yeah. It was fun. It was like, I can do whatever I like. I ran some message boards for it. A lot of the fans also loved doing brainstorming. We had like polls to decide what would be the next project, right? Like to pick a topic. And we had playtesters who were, you know, and we had contributors, right? Like some of the people who later became regular writers for Cobalt Press started off as fans who said, I'm throwing $5 at this guy and I'm going to write some notes on the comments board. Brandon Hodge in particular was one guy who changed an early project. It was called Halls of the Mountain King. It was supposed to be the Mines of Moria project, like all dwarves digging too deep. They've awakened things they should have left alone. That was sort of the premise. And he said, well, yeah, that's all great, and let's not change that. But what if there was also a secret society within the dwarves, like a sort of Masonic brotherhood? And they had, you know, what if the dwarves were a little more interesting than standard Lord of the Rings dwarves? And everybody said, what do you mean, brotherhood? And we were off to the races, right? Like it got way more interesting the moment he said that. And then he wound up writing a chunk of it. And he wrote some other standalone project for Cobalt Press, mostly in the Pathfinder era. But yeah, no, it was a really interesting time because it was very collaborative. A lot of back and forth. It was small enough that I could afford to have a message board that was sort of open to the public, or at least open to anybody who put down a few bucks, right, and said, I want to be part of it. And they could be play testers, and some people were proofreaders, and some people threw like monster ideas in. And some people wrote text for it, or, you know, all sorts of things. Somebody who works on D&D video games now got his start as our layout guy at Cobalt Press. So, I mean, it was a very interesting community of motivated people all jumping in and doing it. But then it got too big, right?
So how did it evolve from there to where it's at now?
Well, I think part of the story of how it got there is actually Cobalt Quarterly, which was the magazine I launched when Dragon Magazine folded, right? It was like 2008 or so, and Wizards of the Coast decided they were done printing a paper magazine, and they weren't real sure they were replacing it with anything. maybe digital. It wasn't clear at the time if they were going to do anything like Dragon. Mm-hmm. And you can argue that, you know, the Dragon Plus online thing is kind of mostly sort of like the old Dragon. It's a little different. But at the time I was, you know, I had edited Dragon Magazine. I was like, no, you can't do this. Mm-hmm. So I said, I'm launching my own, gosh darn it. And that's really what got Cobalt Press into the print side of things in a big way, because 4 times a year we had to ship a magazine to subscribers. And I had people who were very generous sharing, like, how do you even do that, right? Like, print fulfillment, managing subscriptions, taking ads. That was the crucible for me in terms of being a publisher, right? Because mm-hmm. I wasn't writing it necessarily. I was curating other people's writing and trying to make their voice sing and make it interesting for subscribers.
So it went from, you know, Dragon was publishing and you kind of want to make a replacement for that. So yep. You chose Cobalt because it's like a baby dragon, or how'd you
Yeah, we thought about, like, you know, was it going to be like Wyrmling? Was it going to be Wyvern? Was it going to be... Hatchling, was it going to be? And then I finally said Cobalt. Yeah, let's do Cobalt. And Cobalt was chosen for a couple of reasons. One is it's a nice old Germanic monster, right? Mm-hmm. And they're underdogs. They've always been underdogs in D&D. And Cobalt Press at the time was just me, right? And I had helpers and volunteers and freelancers who did stuff. And I had an art director, who laid out the magazine, because I did like 2 issues worth of layout and quickly realized it would take me a long time to get any good at it, and B, there are people who are already good at it. Why don't I pay one of them? Mm-hmm. So it was tiny, but Cobalt was, small but fierce, still our motto, because it felt like we're trying to replace Dragon with, what did it have at the time, like a 40-year history of publication since the 70s. And, you can't just replace that. It wasn't like I was able to commission covers by Larry Elmore and Todd Lockwood or anything. But like I said, people were generous. William O'Connor shared some personal art pieces, like a King Arthur and Merlin cover. Mm-hmm. That was just a beautiful cover piece. And he's like, yeah, I painted it because I wanted to paint it. But I don't really have a home for it or anywhere to publish it. So if you want to have first rights on a magazine, you know, what can you afford? Wow. And I was like, Mr. O'Connor, I'm so freaking grateful, because it was the best cover we'd had to date. I still love it. And it's that sort of generosity that helped. Like, Ed Greenwood showed up and said, I'd like to write an article for you. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I can't afford you, Ed. He's like, nah, I don't care. I want there to be a print magazine. I'm like, you are my kind of dude, right? Wow, like, and he wrote it and I paid him, and he came back for more later, right? Like, he wrote multiple articles. And we also published the last interview with Dave Arneson before he passed, which, I mean, the history of the magazine is sort of we got lucky, we worked hard, and people were generous. So we did 23 issues before I finally said, you know, I think Wizards of the Coast was right. Print magazines are an incredibly heavy lift, and I just can't. Mm-hmm. And the moment we stopped publishing the magazine, Cobalt Press started publishing hardcover books, because we could afford to spend more time putting together a hardcover, right? And Kickstarter came out around that time, too. That helps.
So where is Cobalt Press now? You know, so you've made this transition and kind of what?
Well, that's a really great question. It's doing better than it ever has. We actually have staff now, which still kind of blows my mind, right? Like, we have full-time people who edit, and we have like people who work on fulfillment and the digital side of things, virtual tabletops. We have, you know, an art director still. We have all these things, these people. And I wouldn't call it a big company or anything, but we're riding high on the success of D&D in particular, right? Mm-hmm. But also some of our own titles, which over years have continued to win awards and sell well. Things like the Tome of Beasts, which we shipped mm-hmm. shortly after 5th edition came out, was a massive hit. I think we've done 4 printings. And we kind of, I mean, I wanted to do a big Book of Monsters because I love monsters. Mm-hmm. But it was a 400-page hardcover and just another huge touchstone for the company, right? Like we have an audience of, I don't know, you go on our Twitter account and there's like 25,000 followers or something, right? Or
wow, that's a lot, actually. Yeah.
Yeah, or maybe more. I haven't looked lately. And it's the same on Instagram and Facebook, and there are people on Discord servers talking about us, and we have people who help with the organized play things, the War Duke group. And we have Kobold Press books published in German and French and Spanish and Chinese, right? So it's a real business, frankly. and that's amazing to me because it was never meant to grow into that, but it's been a wild ride so far. And I'm incredibly happy to say that a lot of the best part of it is finding new talent, right? Like finding new voices and new kids. Brandon Hodge is, you know, a talented guy who does stuff on TV now. He does all these other things. I think he owns a candy store down in Austin, all these sorts of things, right? Like interesting people show up. They do really cool stuff in the tabletop space, and some of them stick around, and some of them like say, I wrote a cool adventure, or I submitted a monster and I'm done. But Kobold Press is still looking for those people. Like one of the things we did with Tome of Beasts and Tome of Beasts 2, frankly, is as Kickstarters, we said, we're going to open it up. You can submit a monster. If you back our Kickstarter, you can submit a monster write-up, and we are going to put in some judges to pick the best ones, right? And we'll publish mm-hmm. some of the best. And, you know, I forget what we got, 800 monsters that first time around, and we published maybe 25 or 30, maybe 40. We picked the cream of the crop, and the top 4 or 5 of those, like all the judges just went, oh, yeah, that. And then, you know, the next 10, it's like, yeah, that's good. And then there were 1 or 2 where we're like, one judge is crazy about it, and the other 2 judges are, it's pretty good, right? Or that sort of balance, right? Not everybody likes the same sort of thing in monster design. But we leave it as an open door for people to come into the industry. I think, well, frankly, I think part of the reason we still go to the trouble, because it's a lot of work to take those submissions and do the judging, like reading 800 monsters and picking the best ones takes a week, right?
Yeah,
it's not a light thing that we just do because we feel like it. It's a commitment, and then getting them edited up to spec and all those things. But we do it because when I started in the industry, I read the slush pile for Dragon Magazine and Dungeon Magazine. I'm used to seeing just all sorts of stuff come through, and some of it's great and some of it's awful, and most of it's somewhere in between, right? But I was always really pleased as a young editorial assistant to go to my boss at the time and say, hey, this is a great piece, I think you should read it, right? And they wouldn't always agree, but it was a way to find new people. And Kobold Press still does it. We still have an open submissions policy, which I'm starting to regret, right? Like at some point, well, like I said, there was that early stage of the company where there were just enough people to put on a message board and all kind of chat and riff. And it was very, let's jam on D&D. But then it mm-hmm. got too big. It's feeling like we're getting closer and closer to the point where I have to close submissions for Kobold Press because we have a lot of regular, we have some great writers. Like Wizards of the Coast regularly poaches, borrows, mm-hmm. Promotes. I don't know. They take writers and editors that we have worked with and hire them. And I'm like, well, that's great for them. and less great for Cobalt Press because, you know, this is, they take the top talent. And so we're a little bit of a rung into the upper echelons of the industry sometimes.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Given that you're both in the Seattle area, if that happened quite a bit, I know of Amanda that kind of moved there and then recently moved on. And I was wondering if yes. that was a fairly common thing.
I don't know if it's super common, but like, I can name like 5, 6, 7 RPG companies in the Seattle area.
Mm-hmm.
And we all know each other and there are various right. sizes, right? But like Green Ronin is here. Paizo mm-hmm. is here. Monte Cook Games is here. I'm forgetting something. Oh, the Everway company's here.
Hmm.
There's a bunch. And part of it is, it's like, well, Wizards is here and people go to Wizards. And then at some point, maybe they decide to move on and do their own thing. Or, it moves in both directions, right? People who leave Wizards tend to found their own companies.
Mm-hmm.
But people who work at the smaller shops tend to move on to either work for to one of the bigger shops. And it's not like we don't see each other at, well, before the pandemic, we saw each other at,
right.
you know, barbecues or game nights, or somebody would throw a bash of some kind, or we see each other at Gen Con or trade shows of some kind. So there is definitely a community of talent here. And I don't want to say it's like, yeah, move to LA to go work in movies, move to Seattle to work in tabletop, but that's kind of how it is.
Well, I'm glad I'm in the Seattle area as well, and I do some freelancing, so it's good to hear that this is a good place to be.
Yeah, I mean, you're in the same time zone, you know, you sort of have a sense of what's going on, right? Like you go to the mm-hmm. local hobby shop and you see all the local game companies holding game days.
So how would you characterize the RPG, especially the tabletop RPG industry now, especially for publishers like Cobalt Press? How has it, changed since you first started?
Oh, it's changed tremendously in 15 years. Where to start? Like everything is, right now is a great time for tabletop RPGs, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first wave of that was the D20, the Open Gaming License around 2000 and third edition, which brought a lot of people out of the woodwork to sort of do it themselves. Drive-through RPG made huge strides, but at this point, it's also possible to print things on demand, digital products. Like you can make paper products that would have been impossible to make 20 years ago successfully. And crowdfunding and Kickstarter are basically rocket fuel for the industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
Super niche products can be successful if you connect with the audience that loves that thing, right? If you want to make an RPG about Bronze Age Greece, or you want to make a whole game system about haunted houses, you can, right? All you need to do is figure out what the budget for it should be by going on Kickstarter and saying, okay, I've got 100 backers. Okay, so it's probably kind of a zine. Or got 1,000 backers. Hey, this thing's a cool full-color soft cover. Or got 2,000 backers. Maybe it's a hardcover, right? That sense of knowing how big the demand is before you commit your life savings to a print run is a big deal. And the other big thing that's going on right now, just the last year, is virtual tabletops have gone from, I don't want to say a niche, but maybe a minority interest to, hey, you have no choice. If you want to play with your friends, you are probably either using Zoom or a virtual tabletop or Discord, something, depending on your play style and your game system.
I was going to ask you, how has the pandemic affected Cobalt Press?
Oh, boy. Good and bad. The bad news is shipping is a nightmare,
mm-hmm.
right? Like trucks don't show up when they're supposed to. Getting a container at a reasonable price is bad. Brexit is bad. Like moving physical product around is awful. And for something like 3 to 4 months last year, many friendly local game stores, you know, they shut their doors.
Right.
Which was horrible for them and bad for the community as a whole, right? Like, you couldn't go down there and see what was new. And it was terrible for the publishers who sell books to game books to the local hobby store. So, you know, I had some scary moments looking at the numbers last year where I thought, gosh, Cobalt Press has done so well for so long. Maybe this is it. And, you know, we got to let somebody go, or we got to like pull in our horns, or we got to go huge on Kickstarter and find some way there. And in fact, Kickstarter and virtual tabletops both kept going during the pandemic. And that's what kept us afloat. If anything, virtual tabletops like doubled in size, right? Like, we had been working with Roll20 for years, but it was sort of a, we know there are fans who love that format, we will support it. Not a, we need to hire someone to focus on this full time.
Right.
It just wasn't that big a part of the field. And now that's changed. So, there's Shard, which is a beautiful new third party VTT. Fantasy Grounds has been going forever and is still really strong. Their new Unity engine is beautiful, but a little more work to set up.
Have you seen Foundry?
I have not really looked at Foundry. One of the Cobalt staffers has looked at it and came back kind of raving about it. Like, I keep hearing about Foundry, but I barely keep my head above water with VTTs as it is.
Right.
But there is a Cobalt, a digital Cobalt, who has looked at it and came back and said, this is interesting and we should consider what we can do. So who knows what's going to happen there. But it's one that's getting some buzz. Mm-hmm. That and Shard are the two like new, I think Astral maybe to a lesser degree.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of Astral. The one that's really hit me is Foundry. I'm a big Roll20 fan, and I've used Fantasy Grounds, and Foundry blows both of them out of the water in terms of ease of use and playability, everything. And it is an open source community that's building everything out for it. It's just massive.
It's great. So,
yeah,
I think those things sometimes just take off, right? And it's great when they do. I think right now the VTT space is very competitive. Different people are trying different things.
Yep.
I don't know. We're just going to support as many platforms as we can manage. And frankly, at some point, it may mean we actually do hire someone at Cobalt Press to just, I don't know, handle VTT conversions, right?
At the moment,
we usually find someone who's a developer at one of those companies to help generate material. And it's not really my expertise, right? I came up through print and PDF, but it's something that's reshaping the industry. And I expect the industry to continue changing around that, right? Like, if people keep doing the great stuff they're doing on all of those platforms, they all make each other more competitive. They'll have something that brings that community back.
Yeah. How do you think the tabletop RPG industry is going to evolve from this pandemic on? You think there's still going to be quite a big presence online, or it'll shift back into the stores, or be a hybrid?
Well, I think a lot of people are eager to see their friends in person and, you know, crack open a soda and eat some pizza and throw some dice, right? Like, I like in-person gaming. I miss my game group that played in person for years. And yet I think the ease of use and the resources and frankly, the people who came into the hobby in the last year and did it all online, like, why would they necessarily invite people into their home? I mean, maybe they would for tabletop over a table, but maybe they won't. Maybe that generation is the hardcore of, that's where VTTs take over from in-person gaming. But I think there's going to be room for both. I mean, if you ask me, I saw the same transition with ebooks and paper books, right? where everybody was like, yeah, Kindle and ebooks and all that stuff is going to eat the paper industry for lunch. And, you know, 10 years from now, no one will buy books in a bookstore. They'll just buy the Kindle or Mobi reader, whatever it was at the time. And for people who buy a lot of content, they tend to buy electronic formats. But you'll notice that bookstores still exist. People still love print. And it's shifted to what's best for you at a particular time, right? Like, there are game books I prefer to have in PDF because I use them mostly as references.
Mm-hmm.
And there are game books I like to have in print because when I'm doing game design, for instance, monster books in print are way more useful to me because I can kind of flip through quickly and skim and get inspired by, oh yeah, I forgot this monster, but it's great. I think the browsability of print and I grew up with it. So maybe I'm part of a generation that's still going to cling to it, but there was a time when everybody thought digital was going to flatten the book publishing industry, and it turned out to be only partly true. And I think the same thing's going to happen in role-playing, where these VTTs are going to take a huge chunk of people's time. But if I can invite my buddies over and, you know, we can sit down, have dinner, play a game, chat, that's still a great event, right? That's still something I want to see happen. So,
yeah, no, I agree. I'm a big, you know, hardcover fan. My shelves are full of hardcover stuff, even though I'll have PDFs, like you're saying, for searchability when I'm doing some things. So and for me, I have a couple local groups here and we're all dying to play in person again, you know?
Yep. I think the in-person, when everyone's vaccinated and people feel better about it, and there's just a lot less risk about gathering in groups, I think there's going to be a bunch of groups kicking off new campaigns. And I want Cobalt Press to say, hey, we got a book for you. but I also just want people to have fun with it, right? Like, and to meet up and throw their parties and kick off that new game. Because I think virtual is going to be how groups stay together when somebody leaves town, or when high school or college groups split up across the country. I think it'll be easier to keep those campaigns going virtually, of course, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we only used it before when, you know, we had the relatively few snow days here in Seattle and we couldn't make it. And
couldn't all get to the same place. Yeah, no, that makes sense, right? Like, there's a lot of reasons to use VTTs. And I think we've seen more people give it a try now. So it's probably accelerated that transition by a bunch. Certainly, Cobalt Press is pushing hard to do really the best we can with a format that for some of our books, you know, didn't exist to the same extent. Like Shard, Foundry, some of the newer platforms, you know, they've only been around a couple years, so we're playing catch up on those.
So what advice do you have for aspiring writers for RPGs and maybe even if they want to be publishers, and in particular, people that want to write for Cobalt Press?
Well, sure. The short answer for writing for Cobalt Press is you should take a look at the cobaltpress.com site. I think it's cobaltpress.com/submit is where the submission guidelines are, both for artists and for game designers. And usually my advice is if you want to write for Cobalt Press, pitch us something small. Don't pitch us a 3-volume set, right? Or, you know, the 300-page hardcover. If we haven't heard of you, we're going to be skeptical, right? But we still run blog posts with gaming content for 5th edition 3 days a week on the Cobalt Press blog. So you could say, hey, I've got a cool idea for, you know, a run of 5 articles on the blog, or I've got this one good thing. Or maybe it's something smaller. Maybe it's more like a PDF size thing or some monsters. Those are all good ways in. Obviously, if you back something like a Tome of Beasts project or one of those where we have a Kickstarter that permits submissions from backers, you know, the best thing to do there is write something so awesome the judges all love it, and it, it shoots to the top, and everybody goes, yay, that was the coolest thing in the book. But we don't have one of those running at the moment, but we do probably one of those projects a year. But you don't have to go through Cobalt Press, right? Like, there are so many other ways to go. If you just want to print your stuff and put it out there and see if anybody likes it, you can drive through RPG, and PDF publishing is still probably one of the lowest risk ways to go, because you're not committing to print, or if you are, it's print on demand. And it gives you a sense of what it takes to sort of be a publisher, right? Like, even if you're self-publishing, you still need a cover. You still need someone to edit it. You might need maps, right?
And the layout, don't forget, that's hard too.
And the layout, yeah, which everyone assumes is easy, and it's easy to do a bad one. Mm-hmm. But a good usable layout, especially tables and all the sort of tricky sidebars and art that go into a nice RPG product, those take some time and thought. So yeah, all of those steps, right? And some people want to do it themselves because it gives you way more control over what you're printing and how it appears. Some people just want to do the game design part or the writing and playtest and sort of like, I have this cool idea for an adventure or a lair or a monster, and let someone else worry about the art and the editing and the layout. I don't know. I think that's sort of a matter of individuals. Some people really are game designers, full stop. They don't want to be involved in other parts of the business. And some people are sort of, you know, polymaths. They want to do all of it. They don't mind being involved in, I don't know, the sales and promotion side, as well as the cover art side, as well as the this layout isn't working side.
That sounds like a lot of work to me. I don't know. I like the writing part a lot. I don't know if I want to do all the other part.
Well, I like the writing part a lot too. And I got sucked into other parts of the business and found that it was fascinating, right? Like, I don't like doing, I don't know, contracts and payroll or tax season. Nobody loves that stuff. But if you're a business, right? If you're actually self-publishing and making a few bucks, you eventually got to get a business license and a bank account for it. Or otherwise, you're not really treating it like a serious effort. And I think if you want to be the writer and just the writer, sometimes I miss those days is what I'm saying here, right? Yeah. Like, I just want to write my thing and hand it off and let someone else deal. And other days, I'm on the publisher side of, no, I want it to look like this and let's make it look like that.
So what's next for Wolfgang and Cobalt Press? What kind of cool stuff are you working on now?
Oh, we got a lot of cool stuff going on right now. Next month, the next Cobalt Guide comes out. It's called Cobalt Guide to Monsters. It's part of our best-selling, award-winning series of Cobalt Guides. We have one for world building, we have one for magic, we have one for plots and campaigns. And it's basically talking about monster design and how to use monsters most effectively in your game and how to make new ones that are, you know, worth your time. And the contributors include me and people like Celeste Konowich, and Crystal Fraser, Monty Cook's in it. Gosh, I can't remember all the names, but it's, it's kind of a great one. The editor on it is, Wizards of the Coast designer Amanda Hammond. So she got out her Rolodex and said, who are the best monster designers? Oh, she got the fellow from Chaosium, Mike Mason, I want to say. Anyway, she got some great insights on what makes monsters great. So that's coming.
I'm actually really excited about that. And just to preface this, this is going to come out about the same time that comes out. So that's really cool. I think that's,
yes.
That's a neat thing. I'm excited. Super excited.
That's a good one. That series has been incredibly popular for people who are like homebrewers or just starting out in design. And it's really satisfying. It's been used in classrooms, the Cobalt Guide to Board Game Design, for instance, mm-hmm. Or the Complete Cobalt Guide to Game Design Second Edition. They've been used in classrooms because how else, you know, where do you get Richard Garfield and Mike Selinker telling you how to design a board game, right? Mm-hmm, well, mm-hmm. There's a Cobalt Guide for that. So that one's great. In D&D terms, the next cool thing we've got coming is Scarlet Citadel, which is an old school mm-hmm. dungeon crawl by Steve Winter, coming out in June and probably up for pre-orders or coming into local game shops. The cool thing about Scarlet Citadel is not only is it like a 10-level dungeon, with traps and awesome new monsters and great art. It also has a set of battle maps that are poster-sized and dry erase, wet erase type maps.
What, included?
They're not included. You got to buy them. You got to buy the map packs separately.
All right. That would have been really cool, but yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, like you could print out the PDF version of the files, but it's really not the same. But these posters are huge. Like they take up, they're like 2 feet by 3 feet or ish. Mm-hmm. And there's like 14 of them. And each map has overlays, like 8x10 cardboard cards that you can put over the existing map to show like when the trap has gone off, when the acid has spilled, when the darkness can, or the secret room. Like you don't see the secret room on the printed map, but the secret room's on the overlay, the card. So you slap down the card and suddenly there's the secret room. Mm-hmm. And I just love this because, and it works well on VTT too.
Right.
But I really hope that in June-ish when this ships, June or July, that people are playing in person again and that we got lucky mm-hmm. with the timing here, right? Like people mm-hmm. are like, what can I do? Well, I could buy this enormous set of battle maps and run through an old school crawl. Yes. Mm-hmm. But it's an old school crawl by Steve Winter, who is such a genius at dungeon design and has been doing it longer than I have. Like he was the creative director at TSR for a while. He's mm-hmm. like, he knows this stuff. And there are subplots, there are little factions, there are stories, there are clues, there are, there's like point of view art, like here's what you see kind of things, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All those kinds of things, which are elements of the dungeon part of Dungeons and Dragons that I think are terrific and that aren't always, I mean, Cobalt Press hasn't published a lot of dungeon adventures. We've done cities and wilderness and some dungeons, but this is our biggest one ever. And I gotta say, we're pretty proud of it. Steve did a bang up job. The art's great. Editing's good. So, and the maps are just beautiful.
Yeah, that map pack, that idea, that's like so brilliant. I'm just thinking, why doesn't everybody do that? You know, just have an 8x10 piece that you can just, now it's more art.
It's more art
that you have to do.
Right. And you gotta, it's like, how do you print it and package it? Yeah. And like, it's more. And like, do people want that? Are they willing to shell out a few bucks to get it wet, dry, erase, and printed really great? I don't know. I mean, the counter argument is I could just print out the PDF and it'll look crappy, but whatever, it's good enough, right? Or I could play it on a virtual tabletop and then I don't need a printed thing at all. I guess we'll see.
I run a lot of games for people and I print out big full scale maps typically. Yeah. And they look like crap. I would any day of the week pay to get a good map for those things.
Well, this is 14 good maps and 20 overlays, so...
Yeah, shoot. You could use that for so many homebrews and other things, too, though.
Yeah, there's one that's just a cavern section. There's one that's sort of a dwarven tomb section. There's, like, they're different flavor. Oh, there's a river section, underground river section. So you could reuse them for other things, mm-hmm. But they're all beautifully connected. There's a side view. There's all this stuff, and I think it's going to be popular, but it's one of those things we haven't done before. So we're trying it. And we're also sinking a bunch of effort into making those overlays easy to use in the VTT version, right? So you just pop it in.
Right.
For that. So, that's coming. as well. And then we've got, you know, we got new Kickstarters coming. We're doing a set of spell cards for Deep Magic. That Kickstarter is probably over, but it's like, it's coming in late April and might be over by early May. So yeah, I don't know if it might be all done by the time this goes out. But yeah, we're doing spell cards because they're just great. We did 700 new spells in Deep Magic, and the number one request was, please give us spell cards. So.
Makes it so much easier.
It does. It's a very practical sort of accessory, and we'll see how that goes as well. But yeah, Kobold Press has big plans. We got big Kickstarters coming in the fall, and I'm writing one for the fall. Oh, that's the secret news that I haven't actually shared yet.
What's that?
So I'm doing some game design on a project that I haven't really announced officially yet, but it will be kickstarted this year in October. And that's probably all I can tell you at this point, but I'm 30,000 words in and just chugging along. So it's going great. And I want to spill all the beans, but you'll have to ask me back in October or something. I'll talk about it then.
Well, we might have to look at that, especially if I get this Scarlet Citadel and really like it. I don't know.
Yes. Steve did a killer job on it, and I think you will like it. But I always think the latest project is the greatest, and then I'm pleased when other people agree with me.
Right.
Sometimes they don't. That's okay.
Well, Wolfgang, thanks so much for being on the podcast. I've really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been a blast here. I always like to talk about what's cooking, and I'm tickled pink to talk about kobolds. We're still small and meek and humble, but small and fierce. So keep an eye out for us.
Excellent. Thanks again.
Thank you.